Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Then let's go.
Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Oh, hi, Brian. I didn't see you come in.
Hey, Todd. I just, breaking into people's houses when they're not home and recording podcasts in their
well, that's
room.
Perfect, because not only are we at Mark's house with Mark not here, it is Mark's birthday today. So he is out with Nick, and I asked you to come record.
We're celebrating without him.
We are. So speaking of celebrating, I don't know what the levels of this show are going to be like. So although I don't hear the...
No, it's completely gone.
It's completely gone now. It's still not very loud, so anyway, so hopefully the levels aren't too bad. But since Mark is not here, we dipped into the canister of bar jokes that Mark has. So why don't you go ahead with yours?
Did you buy this for Mark?
No, he got it from, I don't know if somebody gave it to him or if he just ordered it himself.
It looks like a bin's fine.
It does.
All right, so pulling out from the bar jokes, this is, what do you call a haunted chicken?
I don't know.
How well do you know your trauma movie history?
Oh, is that going to give me a hint?
Yeah.
The Poltergeist?
Yes!
That's terrible. But this one's even worse. This one's not even a joke. What is red and smells like blue paint?
What? Why does blue paint have a smell? Red. I don't know, Todd.
Red paint.
Oh, it's... Because all paint smells the same?
What's red and smells like blue paint? Red paint.
Oh my gosh.
This one's not a lot better, I guess. What did the man say whilst he was reversing his car?
I'm coming back for you.
Oh, that's almost, he says, oh, this one takes me back.
Oh, yeah.
So you were close. Well, those are terrible. So in honor of Mark, there's those. But thank you for joining me on this episode of the Mark and Todd Cast. I do have a few other things. Did you hear that Google Chat is finally the Google Plus is finally going away.
Google Plus is going away. I'm so happy.
Yeah. I didn't know I had a Google Plus account until they emailed me and said that it was going to be no longer.
That was a product that nobody asked for.
Which is kind of interesting that a company that big can be like have something that just nobody uses.
Well, it just felt weird because like everyone at that point had Facebook and we were all fine with Facebook,
yeah.
and Google was like getting all upset because they wanted a piece of the social media action.
And I think that's like now that everybody has had Facebook for so long, I don't know what other social media is going to come in and have us all. I mean, that's why we're all still on Facebook. It's like that's just where all the stuff is.
We're all, yeah.
Like, I don't want to move. It's like
exactly.
Moving into a different place.
Yeah, that's totally what
and
it's
it
like.
It just stinks, and it's just going to be the same where you end up anyway. So let's just all stay here.
And the only, I feel like any new social media that has any chance are those like very specific things. Like Snapchat, you know, had its moment.
Yeah.
And now it's something called TikTok.
Yes.
I don't know if you know anything about.
No, I think Mark's kind of obsessed with TikTok. He sent me a link with some of them, and
yeah,
they've popped up on. I've been obsessed with since I've made it all the way through all of the half in the bags and all of the best of the worst several times. I had to force myself to go find something new, and so there's this one of the viral video companies, Jukin.
Yeah,
they have been doing best of the week like collections since like 2015, and they're like 7 minutes long or
yeah.
whatever, just whatever viral. So I've just been watching like back to back. There's like 300 of those. But finally, you popped up in one.
Oh,
like
funny.
From 2015. It was
Batman and Superman?
No, it was BB-8.
Oh.
When you were on top of the BB-8 ball.
That's
I was
cool.
Like, oh. It's always so weird to see you out in the wild.
Unexpected.
Speaking of out in the wild, you made an appearance not at my church this morning, but apparently my niece's fiance's church, which is the, I forget it's.
I was not there.
Not there in person. It's in Tualatin somewhere. But she texted me this morning. She's like, The Unabomber's video was shown at church. They were using it as some like lesson for like the little children's illustration. They were using the Elsa, your new Elsa video. So
Frozen.
It was
funny.
She's like, so he was at church today, which is funny. So yeah, Google Plus is going away. So you have, do you have Google Home at your house?
I
or
do.
Do you have, okay. Yeah. So, and I always forget that when I come over because I think you always hide it behind the plants or whatever. So that I mean, I don't see them.
These smart speakers are not meant to be seen. Let's face it.
That's true.
You just want it to exist without having to look at it.
But last week we were here for the Super Bowl at, here at Mark's house, and he has, he just got the Google Home. And he has the Hue lighting system, which is the wireless lights that can, you know, automatically change to any color in the spectrum. And
yeah,
you can change each one individually. And he has the can lights in his living room. And he had it hooked up to some sort of like if this, then that
right.
system.
There was like an app that was working in conjunction with the lights that was getting the live feed, the score, and the touchdowns.
Of the Super Bowl. And so like if something good for the Rams happened, then it would apparently blink
flash
blue
the
and
Rams
yellow
colors.
And
now the one thing I could not figure out is he has in his living room, I think probably 7 or 8 of those light bulbs.
Yeah.
And to me, it seemed like when the lights would flash, they would flash alternate colors, like every other light would, you know, flash in sequence. And like, how does Google Home know the order of the lights?
Well, I know because they'll sit there and Google turn can 7 green or whatever. So I know it's programmed in the Hue, which one is which. And, and I know you can, I don't know how complex Mark made his, because at some one point he was just automatically do or manually doing it himself.
Yeah.
But then it, and I don't, I never got from him what it was hooked up to, but we would be watching the football game and nothing was happening, which was most of the game. But then all of a sudden, like during a moment where they weren't even playing, all the lights would start flashing. And we're like, well, what's that? And then we figured out about 30 to 60 seconds later on our TV, like there would be a touchdown or whatever. It was, so we were getting predictive sports spoilers.
Right, because the game, the broadcast was on a delay. And the lights were like real time what was going on in the game.
Yeah, so we eventually towards the end of the game, because it was sort of exciting there for a little bit towards the end. And so we just turned it off because it kept predicting like when a flag would be on the play. Or it was so ridiculous.
Can you imagine if they had that for other aspects of daily life? Like Donald Trump said something stupid.
God.
Flash
just,
red.
Just, yeah, sirens go off. It would just be constantly going off all day long. I also had written down here. So I came over to your house last Monday or something.
Was
like
I
that.
Home?
and I used your Kivo to get in when you weren't there.
And then you recorded a podcast in my bedroom.
That's just what I do, is break into people's houses and record from.
Wouldn't that be an interesting concept for a podcast?
Breaking and entering the podcast.
Breaking in the podcast.
Casey Semesco is probably not doing a whole lot right now. I could probably swing him as a guest. but I came over because you had a birthday present for me. And so I came over and you had mentioned it about a week or two ago. You're like, oh, I didn't know what to get. But all of a sudden I found like the thing to give you and it's going to be here, you know. And so you teased it. And I was trying to think like what could it be that you like not thought of, have been thinking of, but like something that came up that. And I was trying to think. And so I come over and you gave me the package and there was a folded up blanket inside. And that's, I saw that and I was like, well, that's nice, but confusing. Like why, you know, why would the, and so I pull it out on one side. It's kind of a faux fur kind of nice blanket or whatever.
Sherpa, I think they call it.
Nice. And then I turned it around and
premium Sherpa.
The other side, you had printed the VHS box art for the movie Frozen Assets.
Tell them what size blanket it is.
It is like a full size bed size blanket. And so like Shelley Long and Corbin Burnson are almost life size on this blanket. And it's a terrible movie that we did for Portland at the movie that was filmed here in Portland. And I don't know that I've been so like shocked with anything as I was that. And just, it was amazing. And so Shelley Long is now on my on my downstairs chair staring at me.
I liked how you had it folded and it just said frozen ass.
It's just an ass with Shelley Long's face because I had like tossed it over. So that was great. I went to the there's a comic book store called Comic Adventure that used to be in Gladstone that just moved a little bit further down the road, but now they're off McLaughlin Avenue in kind of the Gladstone, that area. And I just went in yesterday to get David Walker's. He just did a graphic novel of a Frederick Douglass biography.
Huh.
And a new comic called Naomi, which I haven't read, but just a regular DC comic.
That guy is so busy.
I know. And that's like not the only comic they had of his, and that's not the only thing he's doing right now. So anyway, I picked up that, and I was like, I'm going to send David Walker a picture of me like reading his fine art books under my as I'm wrapped in my frozen assets blanket. And I did get a message after I posted that on Facebook. Someone's like, my cousin was Shelley Long's personal assistant on that movie.
Yeah.
So
that blanket is like bringing the community together.
We can finally figure out if it was a tax dodge, that whole movie. But speaking of movies, have you seen the Price is Right documentary?
What?
Mark told me about it last week, and I forget what it's called. It's on...
Don't say it's on Hulu.
No, it's on Google. Google. It's on
Amazon?
Amazon Prime. And it's called... Here, let me...
Oh, this...
Just look up Price is Right Doc, okay. and Shabbat to get the exact name. But the story is about... if you remember, maybe 10 years ago, after Drew Carey had taken over the show, they had a showcase showdown where one of the contestants bid to the dollar amount, and it was like, you know, $21,683, something like that, like the exact amount of the showcase showdown. The first time that's obviously ever happened. And Drew Carey talks about it, and he's like, I thought my job was done. I thought everything was going to be canceled because it's like obviously something, you know. But it turned out that there's this guy that way back in the early 80s when Price is Right was just starting, decided to make an Excel spreadsheet of all of the things and all of the prices because he noticed that they kept coming up. And so he's the type of guy that just sort of memorized that all and would like show up to tapings in the early 80s. And they had footage of him in the audience.
So he'd been like planning
shouting
this, like,
out
since.
Well, not really play. He just did it for a hobby and then would go to tapings and then like be the person in the crowd that shouts out, you know, to help the bidders. And then like sometimes the contestants would figure out that he was getting it right every time. And then sometimes he eventually got on the show, but didn't get past the big wheel. So it tells his story. And he's the one who shouted from the audience the exact bid this other guy ended up bidding on. But then this other guy claimed that it was him. And so it's just crazy. What is it called? Did you find it?
Yeah, it looks like it's called Perfect Bid. The contestant who knew too much.
Yeah, so and it's only like an hour, 10 minutes long or something like that. But it's really fun and just a really, a dorky guy who just memorized all the Price is Right prices because he just noticed a similarity in all of them.
Oh, that's cool. Do they show footage of Bob Barker in the documentary?
Yeah, Bob Barker's in it. They got they had a lot of footage from the shows that he was on, a lot of backstage footage of like all of the games, like kind of tucked away in the wings to bring out, which was neat to see. So
Cool. Yeah,
it's really well done and it's really fun. So, but have you heard of the TV show? This is an old TV show called Corner Gas. It is a Canadian sitcom.
No.
So I forget why I was reminded of it. I was talking with Colin's older brothers, and Michael is really into David Lynch and Twin Peaks and all that. And I sort of remember this Canadian sitcom that my wife had discovered early on Saturday mornings. They would play it on like WJGN or TBS or one of those.
Okay.
And it's a Canadian television sitcom called Corner Gas. And it's about this gas station in the middle of nowhere in Saskatchewan. And it's like literally just a stop on the highway that goes through the plains of Saskatchewan, and there's like a little 300, you know, people town, or not even that big or whatever, but it's about the guy that owns the gas station. And I described it to Michael as if Twin Peaks was a sitcom.
Oh my gosh.
Because it's not a multi-camera. It's done on film. It's like shot well. Huh. It has like a super specific and Canadian, the guy who did it is called Brent Butt, unfortunately, but he's like kind of a well-known Canadian comedian. And they have all these Canadian politicians and stars that show up, like the Kids in the Hall guys will be in for an episode. And they had a whole joke, running joke about like articles and sentences like the or an, like a whole bit based on people's favorite articles and sentences. And like that's on Amazon Prime too. And so I'd watched it way back then and I started watching it again and it really holds up and is really an interesting, quirky, not you know,
wow,
sweet.
Wow, it's got an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. That's really nice. High.
Yeah, so it's a really great show. So if you're looking for
it's on for 5 years, huh?
Yeah. So it's very Canadian and very, very quirky and odd, but really well done. And so
I'm intrigued. That sounds cool.
Yeah, so check that out. One last thing before we get in the news. Sadly, Brian is on the receiving end of Todd hasn't recorded a podcast in 2 weeks.
Let it out. So, I'm here for Todd's therapy today.
I know, and I can talk about all these random things. Like, have you back in the late 80s, did you know about a toy called Sectars?
Sectars, yeah, of course.
So when I was growing up, this was like 1986 or so, I remember we were going to go on a family vacation up into the mountains. We had someone was letting us use their cabin or something like that, and I was waiting for my mom and dad to get off work, but Southern California was having like a gigantic, huge rainstorm, and when it rains down there, it like is crazy. And I remember it being thunder and lightning, which we never get down there, and so my dad was stuck at work or something, and I remember waiting this crazy rainy afternoon watching afternoon cartoons, and each ad break was for these Sectars toys.
Yeah, they were like
insect action figure.
Yeah, they were like knights that would ride giant insects.
Yeah, and so their ad was like, it was like a serial, how each ad was part of the story. And for some reason, that just stuck in my head. I never got the toy or saw him anywhere. And so my whole adult life, I'd been asking people, like, have you heard of the... And I couldn't remember, so I didn't know if they were insectoids or insectosauruses or whatever. But I found a whole episode of this YouTube channel called Toy Galaxy.
Oh, I love that channel.
Okay, I figured... I was like, I should tell Brian about it, who probably already knows about this
channel.
I
subscribe.
So he had... I watched one of his episodes on Sectors, and it was... It's just so satisfying to just be like, oh, it wasn't crazy.
Making
and like,
it up.
Yeah, somebody else remembered that, and... Anyway, so Toy Galaxy on YouTube is a good channel too. So
that's actually a funny idea. If someone were to buy the advertising, but instead of using it to advertise, just tell a sequential story and you have to catch all the commercials to follow the story.
That would be good. And that's totally what it was. And that's why I remember, because by the end of the day, like I never got to watch TV that much, but because of the storm and all the delays and we were just stuck at home and couldn't do anything else. And I just remember it was like during G.I. Joe or something. Ready for some news?
Wait, we haven't been doing news?
We haven't been doing news.
Oh, that's been the intro.
That is my pre-roll. But last time...
You going to ask what I've been up to?
Oh, yes, Brian. I'm never used to Mark responding. He's just always tired by this point. But yes, what have you been up to, Unipiper?
I went to IKEA today.
Really?
I did, yeah.
What was that like?
I had a realization today. So we went to IKEA because my daughter Scarlett, she is in that phase where she's kind of outgrowing baby stuff and we're transitioning to toddler stuff.
Yeah.
So all of our baby stuff we're trying to downsize and get some new stuff that's more age appropriate. So we went to IKEA and had lunch there. And what I realized having lunch at IKEA today is like we will watch bad movies and have some form of joy and entertainment out of watching the bad movies. It's like eating IKEA food. Like it's bad, but on a certain level, there's like comfort and joy that comes from it.
I have never eaten at IKEA, which I know everybody does, but I feel like when I'm...
It's like watching a Canon VHS.
It's like watching Death Wish 4.
And it's really cheap too. Like,
well, by the time I get to that area of the store, I'm in the checkout line, and like by then you're just shell-shocked and tired and like I want to get home and trying to figure out how to fit everything in my car.
I'm not talking about like the ice cream and hot dogs at the exit. I'm talking about like the full-on restaurant upstairs.
I don't know that I've ever been to the restaurant upstairs.
Oh my gosh, they have a full-on restaurant, and that's where you
what?
Get, yeah, you get the famous dish of the Swedish meatballs.
I thought that was just like, yeah, that one right by the checkout.
No. Upstairs, it's a full sit-down.
There's a whole hidden IKEA I didn't even know about?
Well, I mean, it is pretty big, but come on.
That's crazy.
It's like $5.99 for.
And it's like a sit-down restaurant.
It's kind of
or like a cafe.
Cafeteria okay. style where, you know, you take your tray up and then someone behind the lunch lady slops it onto your plate and then you go sit down.
Into segregated click groups just yes. like in high school.
And so today I just kind of had the realization that it is. Like eating IKEA food is like watching a bad movie. You're gonna get some enjoyment out of it, but
there are those foods though, like the really cheap Swanson chicken pies.
Uh-huh.
Like there's those food that was when if my mom and dad ever had to be out for the night or whatever, that was always the you guys can just throw this in the microwave. And like
yeah.
I just have such an affinity and like such a specific taste for those, and like the Totino's pizza, and like when you want one of those, like that's what you want, is that specific weird, not great, but
I just had this thought, and I haven't thought about these in years, but did you remember, I think it was called like Magic Box or something, and they were microwave french fries, and
no.
they came in these individual red boxes, and it was a single serving of french fries, and you would throw this box into the microwave, and then you would pull it out, and you open it, and it's got like a foil lining on the inside of the box, and it tries to crisp the french fries.
I have never heard of that. How do they turn out? Probably
they
not
do
great.
Not turn out very well. Like they are a french fry in and of themselves. They are comparable to no other fry, if you want to call them fry,
right?
But they, for what they are, like I'm suddenly craving them. I've got to go see if they still exist.
I still eat mini pot pies, and now I get the big Marie Callender's one, and
yeah.
it's really good. And in the microwave, like the crust comes out flaky and nice, and nothing better than a good pot pie.
Yeah.
IKEA, man, I'm gonna have to go upstairs.
You're gonna have to go. I want your
at least have their meatballs, because I've never had their meatballs.
I have their meatballs, and it comes with the lingonberry sauce.
What is that?
It's that Swedish berry that's a lot like a cranberry.
Huh.
L-I-G-O-N, lingonberry.
Oh, okay, yeah. Lignon, or
yeah.
whatever. I always wondered what that was called.
And then you can buy their like elderflower juice drink. It's all this crazy Swedish stuff. You would like it because it has all these, weird letter combinations that you can't pronounce.
Yeah, 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 nice.
Very Swedish, very Dutch-like.
Oh, that's awesome. I can meet other people with my affliction. I did Brian Turner, your friend and mine, Brian Turner.
That shocked me.
We were talking on Super Bowl Sunday, and I was talking about my free canned, and he's like, I think my grandpa has that or something like that. I'm like, well, it's coming your way.
You guys are going to be free cans together. Maybe
we'll have our special monkey grip. Like
now, do you get it on both hands? Or
sometimes this on my left hand, I don't have anything. It's just so far on my. But on my left hand, I do have those weird knuckle growth things that I think might be, my mom has similar ones, and hers is arthritis. So I'm assuming that's, I'm just falling apart. 44 never looked so good. But let's talk about dwarves.
Dwarves, okay.
Dwarves. Actually, I think it might be dwarfs.
Dwarfs?
I don't think it's dwarves unless you're talking about like druids and stuff.
So
I kind of noticed that a couple of years ago that I always thought dwarfs when you refer to the person. So last episode.
These are not mythical beings.
These are not mythical beings. These are actual little people dwarf. We talked about it on the last show at the very end of dwarf, the banning dwarf tossing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So a proposed statewide ban on risky dwarf events, including dwarf tossing and potentially also wrestling, drew support at a public hearing Thursday, along with questions about its breadth. At least five people with dwarfism showed up to the hearing, telling the committee that, quote, dwarf tossing events, sometimes held as promotions at bars and strip clubs, contribute to a culture of mockery and bullying. The ban proposed by Spokane Valley Republican Mike Patton would prohibit any physical hazardous activity involving a person with dwarfism in an adult venue or bar. The reason there is some pushback of that because it does, this could apply to wrestling too.
What about free speech?
I'll answer that with what actual dwarf this lady says. Gay tossing, Muslim tossing, black tossing, Jew tossing. If any of those were topic of today's discussion, the outcry would be deafening, Brian. That's why.
But if they consent, then I think it, you know, if we this conversation is going to get bad fast. But if you have two consenting adults who are perfectly fine,
one of them wants to get tossed and the other one does not,
they should be free to toss.
Yes. So They are trying to figure out if that does cover things like wrestling, which of course is legitimate adult entertainment, they would call that. But so follow that story. out of Olympia, Washington.
I will.
Toss the dwarves no more.
I'm setting up my Google search right now. Save search.
Yes, really. Did a seal eat your USB drive? In New Zealand, found it in a frozen slab of poop. So the photo scientists found on it are the only clues of its owner. The agency is offering a return to that person for a price. The particular stool sample was frozen for a year before researchers finally found the time to dismantle it. Update, since I pulled that story, update from 2 days ago. In a surprise twist, the drive that contained photos and videos of frolicking lions and kayaking, the owner of that, this is the article, the fecal flash drive, has come forward to tell her story. In a matter of hours, the internet did its thing and found the drive belongs to New Zealander Amanda Nally.
This had to have been a Reddit thing.
So, quote, "I feel bad here because I feel like I'm ruining a really good story," she told the newspaper. "The truth is I'm quite seal focused and I found the leopard seal outside the beach and I guess I dropped the USB stick into the seal poo onto the beach. But this story doesn't hold up because they found it inside a frozen poop," which meant that, you know, what went through its system. "I think she's trying to cover her tracks for irresponsibly letting wildlife swallow computer parts."
I agree. That's so, not something you would know.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a controversy with the seal poop USB drive. There's a story about a cryptocurrency exchange says it can't access $190 million after the CEO unexpectedly died.
I heard this.
So there's an exchange that said it can't access that after the CEO Gerald Cotton died at the age of 30 without sharing the password for his encrypted laptop. He was the sole officer and director of the Canadian cryptocurrency exchange where he died in an affidavit that was part of the company's request for. So now the company needs court assistance and seeks protection from its creditors and bankruptcy protection because it can't access any of the money it supposedly gathered in this laptop.
I feel like cryptocurrency, it all has a unique identifier, right? And it's like there's some public ledger showing its transaction.
I don't know.
I just feel like whoever's in charge of that particular currency could free it up or right. I don't know.
I wonder if they're trying to steal it, I say, already heaping scorn on this poor woman who lost her husband. The laptop that Cotton used to move funds between what's called cold wallets and hot wallets is encrypted, so that's why they can't get to it. And I did wonder, like, what's to stop, like, a government or some sort of entity like that from mining Bitcoin and like using their nation's resources to mine this Bitcoin currency.
If they focused all of their resources into mining Bitcoin, would that be more productive than
trying to
growing soybeans?
Yeah. Or just to like, if you're bad people trying to get money that way, or I don't know. Cryptocurrency just freaks me out a little bit.
Why isn't Amazon mining cryptocurrency with all of their resources?
They probably are. The National Enquirer probably knows. Speaking of giant corporations that have nothing but our best interests in mind, Verizon throttled unlimited data to California Fire Department during the Mendocino wildfire. So the Santa Clara County Fire Chief detailed how Verizon's rules over what happens when customers go over their data limits on its plans disrupted devices essential to his department for coordination of firefighting resources. He said that Santa Clara County had an unlimited data plan with Verizon, but internet service slowed to 1/200th normal speed after they reached their 25 gigabyte data storage in the middle of these historic wildfires. Verizon refused to lift the restrictions on data speeds until the fire department upgraded to a bigger account.
What are you going to say?
It's business.
This is the rules, folks.
That's the rules. Verizon's hands are tied.
Shouldn't have been torrenting the secret life of pets.
I'm not going to get into this one as much, but there's a whole story about one of those DNA services called Family Tree DNA. The story's title is Family Tree DNA hands the FBI access to its database. And they are one of the largest private genetic testing companies in the world is cooperating with the FBI to give its agents access to its genealogical database. The partnership asterisk, first reported by BuzzFeed News, so however you're feeling about BuzzFeed News at this point, marks the first known time a consumer DNA kit company has voluntarily given law enforcement access to their database. They most recently did this in the Golden State Killer case. But if you read a little bit further, they're technically only giving the FBI access to the same thing that any regular user would have, which apparently the way that this works, you can see other people's, like if you have a 92% match with someone you don't know, then you're able to see that and look into their history. So they technically just kind of created an FBI account basically to kind of look at the same thing, which isn't as bad obviously as handing access to its database, but still kind of interesting, like how, like what is that going to look like in the future?
I've heard so much bad things regarding privacy and those DNA services that, you know, at first I was, you know,
I'm so curious.
Intrigued like most consumers and wanted to do it or wanted to buy it as a present for a family member. And after reading into it, I was like, no, thanks. Yeah. It is just not worth the legal minefield right now. There's going to have to be some regulation in place to really start to put limits on how that stuff is used, because it's such a new field that they're just figuring it out.
Well, I'm not afraid of like what they're going to use it for now. It's like, but what are they going to use it for in 50 years?
Yeah.
Like, where is this? And then everyone will just have this. And I don't know. Again, I don't know what they would do with it, but that's what scares me, because I don't know what they would do with it.
Well, so they can just sort of, I guess, whenever there's a crime or something, ping one of these databases. Yeah. And even if you are not in there, if a family member is in there, it'll come up with enough of a match, and then they could track you down that way.
Yeah. So like if my brother was in there, then clearly I would be in there as well, because we would be such a close match. Oh, that's so weird. I don't think my brother's in there. Mark is, though, because I think he did 23andMe or something like that a couple years ago. Wow. All right. One last story here. Bruce Wayne was born at the Oregon Zoo. It's a pint-sized baby goat. And they arrived at the, what is this place called? It is the Johnson Center for Wildlife Conservation. Wildlife Conservation is where they I was going to say that's where they teach Coco sign language. Wildlife conservation located on the Metro-owned open land in rural Clackamas County. So he's not at the zoo proper, but he's at one of their outlying places.
Wait, this is a story simply because they decided to name the baby goat Bruce Wayne?
Yes, and they had a cute, of course, video of Bruce Wayne prancing around. He was named Bruce Wayne because...
a contest. Please tell me a contest.
No, in honor of his father, Justice, as in DC's Justice League. Quote, Bruce can be proud of his roots. Parents Lilac and Justice are part of the herd at the Wildlife Conservation. There, the goats help out resident California condors by eating wild vegetation, including invasive species plant like English ivy and Himalayan blackberry. That's the thing. And you were telling me, I think, about the area behind your house, how they cleared that out with goats.
Yeah.
That was nothing but like a gigantic...
Blackberry
bramble.
Yeah, and we have a time-lapse video of the whole thing, and within 48 hours, it was just, boom, clear.
And that's not a small area. I mean, that is a house-sized lot area of...
Yeah, goats are amazing. I think it was like 10 goats in 48 hours, and it was just cleared out.
You think goats would be fatter? Like, they literally eat everything except
aluminum
cans.
All the time, yeah.
I remember we had one for a little bit growing up. Bucky the goat, and I think he was Bucky the lipless goat, because at some point his bottom lip had been torn off in some crazy thing before he came to our house.
Oh, wow.
But I remember standing on the other side of our chain link fence mowing the lawn or doing something, and before I knew it, that stupid goat had over half of my shirt eaten through the fence and just munching away on my shirt. And God, goats are so weird with their crazy slit eyes.
Yes, reptilian eyeballs.
Oh, they're so weird. So anyway, Bruce Wayne is now, and apparently there's a popular series called Tiny Goat Visits, which must be a TV show.
Okay.
It says previous title holder, because this is the tiniest goat in the barn. The previous title holders, Ruth and Sonia, were stars of the popular series Tiny Goat Visits. So apparently that's a thing that exists.
Wait, so it was filmed in Oregon?
I guess, because it says it's at that in that barn, the previous stars of, or maybe this is where Tiny Goat visits go to retire when they're not tiny anymore.
We're gonna have to watch this in Portland at the movies now.
All right, well, that's all the news I had. So today's idea, which I really love, you thought of it. So why don't you give us an outline of what you're thinking and how you proposed it to me, because it's really fun.
Yeah, so I was thinking, and this idea came to me a couple of weeks ago when there's a video game that just came out, Resident Evil 2. Mm-hmm. And it's a remake of Resident Evil 2 that originally came out in 1998. And it is one of my all-time favorite video games. And I was looking forward to this remake like nothing else I'd look forward to in a very long time.
Yeah, Michael is super into it. He's got like a bunch of cool like t-shirts and stuff with the RF something, whatever is it called?
RE.
Oh yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so anyways, the game came out, and this is one of those rare instances when something that you look forward to so much lives up to your expectations, and if not, surpasses them. And that feeling is just really cool. It doesn't happen very often.
It's so rare.
Yeah. And then I got to thinking about just like hype in general and things that you have looked forward to and how they played out and how that affected your overall enjoyment of whatever it was that you were consuming.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be interesting to talk about some of those things that you can think back on, that the moments you were most looking forward to something and how that played out.
Okay. Yeah, that's such a good idea. And I realized, because pop culture I was always fascinated with and really into, but I got a late start because we just typically didn't watch TV, or like my parents don't care about movies or TV stars or whatever. They're just ambivalent. And so, and we didn't get cable until I was in junior high, and a VCR until I was in junior high. So I missed out, and I never really listened to the radio because I was listening to talk radio. Even back then, as a kid, I listened to Ken and Bob in the mornings on KAZ.
Can't wait for that new Ken and Bob.
They're like 60-year-old men. Talking about California politics.
They disappointed me.
But I as I was trying to think of some of these, I realized that I don't think I have as many of them as a lot of people do, but I think because of that, they were kind of a bigger thing. And I didn't even really know like the concept of especially waiting for an album to come out, like going to a midnight opening, didn't even occur to me until I was in college. And I went to my two roommates in college were super into Pearl Jam. And where I went to college at that point was in Iowa, just in the middle of nowhere. And so if you drive an hour north, you would get to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. If you go an hour south, you get to Sioux City, Iowa, both of which were super small back then. But that's where the music started. There was no music. There's 7,000 people in the college town. And so to do anything, you had to drive. So in the middle of the night, we drove an hour and a half to Sioux Falls to stand in line for Verses when Pearl Jam's Verses came out. And
funny.
I was like, people go...
Now, did you care about Pearl Jam, or are you just going because of your friend?
I just went there because I was like, what do you mean people are going to a music store at midnight?
That's interesting.
Why don't they go the next day when the store is open? Like, it didn't occur to me that this experience of waiting and being with other people could be interesting or fun.
Yeah, so, and that's an even more interesting to experience that from a perspective of someone who was just sort of observing it. And not buying in on the hype necessarily.
Yeah, kind of like going to Comic-Con, how it's fun to see people that are so super into this one thing that they're devoting this time and energy to it.
I had that experience too, not with Verses, but with Harry Potter, when the Deathly Hallows book came out.
Yeah.
I was not really into Harry Potter at that time, and some of my coworkers were, and so they drug me out to the midnight release at the bookstore, and I got to kind of...
Did you go to Powell's?
No, this was in North Carolina, where I was living, and all these kids were there, and they were dressing up, and I could appreciate it, but you know, something like that when you're not on the inside, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, let's go. How should we organize this?
I don't know. We can either just trade off back and forth and talk about specific examples,
or we can do chronologically, which might be interesting. Okay, well, let's. What was the first one that came to mind for you?
Let's well, we should probably just get this one out of the way, because I think if we compared our list, I think we probably there's one, and this one is such an interesting one, because whether or not you were in on it, it affected your life in some way, I guarantee.
Right.
Because it was at that time when the internet was just becoming to be a major force in how people consumed their media.
Right.
And of course, I'm talking about Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. I remember just waiting, you've been waiting for that. So where
were you and what age were you around? This was 1997.
So I was in high school. I think I was in 10th grade.
Okay.
Yeah. And what about you?
So I would 1997, I would have been 22. It was my first year of marriage, and I was in Kennewick, Washington, in the Tri-Cities, Washington.
Yeah.
And I remember... It was the first year after I graduated, and so I was working at an advertising agency in Yakima, Washington. We had just gotten the internet, of course. It was all dial-up, so I couldn't do it at home, but this is when the trailer came out.
Yes.
I mean, which is still an amazing trailer.
Oh, yeah. It got the hype going. It served its purpose. And this was one of the first trailers I can remember.
Every legend has a beginning.
Yeah. This is one of the first trailers I can remember where its release, like, it basically premiered online, and people were turning to the internet for their first chance to see it.
And at work, I downloaded the teeny tiny little QuickTime video where which took all afternoon of the company's resources.
Yeah.
And I just watched it over and over and over again. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be so good.
I remember before I left for school that day, I clicked like load. And then before I had to leave the house, I'd seen like the first 3 seconds. And then I had to wait all day before I could
come
home.
Which is just the Gungans coming through the fog.
I should have watched this again in preparation.
Let's watch it right now. So yeah, Phantom Menace, obviously. So the lead up to the Phantom Menace was, I think, probably the biggest thing.
It was massive.
The pop culture has probably ever seen, at least up to that point.
It was really galvanizing in terms of like geek culture, because up until that point, being a Star Wars fan, because you got to remember, before 1997, Star Wars was in kind of like the dark ages.
Yeah.
If you were a Star Wars fan, I don't know, were you a Star Wars fan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the things, like, we didn't do a lot of movies. The only movies we really were allowed to watch growing up were either Star Wars or if there was a Disney movie. But at that point, like, Disney wasn't really making movies.
Yeah.
So like if Snow White was back in the theater, like, we'd go see that. But they did make an exception for Star Wars.
So I guess the special editions had come out. And
yeah,
that was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's true.
But that was more of a big deal for like just Star Wars fans, I feel.
Yeah, just to see it on the big screen again.
But then when they, you know, the new Star Wars, that, you know, it excited like everyone, and it brought Star Wars back into the mainstream and the spotlight.
Well, and that's when people were camping out for like months.
I feel like that was probably the first movie where I remember hearing about people camping out.
That's kind of true, because and not to back up too much, but I will mention that the first thing, chronologically at least, on my list about all this anticipation, it was Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, because I think those might have been two of the first movies I saw in a movie theater for sure. I don't remember much about Empire, but I remember Hoth, and I remember that in that experience in the theater.
Uh-huh.
And then when Jedi came out, I was 8, and we were allowed to go, me and my brother and my older neighbor were allowed to go to the theater by ourselves. I think it was summer. And so I remember being dropped off, and there was a line all the way around the theater to see Jedi. And I don't remember anything about that theater experience, but those were my early anticipation ones, because like going to the theater was an amazing experience, and like movies were an amazing experience.
Yeah. And you had to wait, you know, at that point, I guess 3 years before Return of the Jedi had come out.
Yeah. Did you see any of the original ones in the theater that you remember?
No, I was just a couple months old when Return of the Jedi hit theaters.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, I don't remember the first time I saw Star Wars, because it had just like always been around.
Yeah. My neighbor, Jeff Yankee, had a VCR and Star Wars. And so literally every day we would just have Star Wars on in the background, and that would be playing, you know, as we were doing other stuff. Or it's just crazy. And they had something called On TV, which was like an HBO rival, and that played Star Wars all the time too. And so he had that pay channel On TV, which I thought was funny. But so your experience then, the lead up to Phantom Menace is coming. We're all exciting.
Yep.
So tell me about, I'm assuming you saw it on the opening day.
I'm trying to remember. Yes, I did. Cause I remember I did not go to the midnight screening on probably like the Thursday.
Right.
I went to the, like after school on Friday, but still within that first weekend. And I remember, that's right, I do remember I did have a friend who went to the midnight screening, and he was like the cool kid at school, because he went to school the next day, and he's like, I've already seen
it. Oh, nice, nice pull.
And I remember him saying, oh yeah, it's awesome.
Course.
Yeah, because, and that was the, what's so interesting about this is that hype was so big, no matter how bad the movie was, nobody was going to immediately be like, well, that sucked.
Yeah. And I didn't, I mean, I was kind of at a point in my life, because I didn't grow up on a lot of movies and culture and stuff like that, I didn't have the ability to kind of parse things and figure out, like, if it was a movie, it must be good, because else they wouldn't make a movie.
They wouldn't have made it.
Like, there's the committee that says, these are the good movies, so we'll put these out. Like, I didn't know how any of that worked.
Yeah.
And so I remember it was probably like, I took the day off work, I think, and I went to like maybe the 10:45 a.m. showing or like that. And I still remember one of the coolest, the best theater experiences I've ever had is the anticipation of us all waiting for it to start and then hearing the Fox fanfare and
yes.
then hearing, seeing the Lucasfilm logo and then
everyone cheered.
And then it was such just,
So like, regardless of what we think of the movie today, those were genuinely good experiences.
Yeah. And of course I saw it like 5 more times in the theater.
Yeah.
And thinking, you know, that pod racing scene, that was really great. that lightsaber duel is totally great.
The music.
The music was great.
The music was fantastic.
The new John Williams, Duel of the Fates. no Attack of the Clones. I think Attack of the Clones is probably the worst of the prequels.
Yeah.
I've been able to sit through Phantom Menace again, but I don't think I've ever been able to sit through Attack of the Clones again.
Anyways, that was an experience.
That was kind of I would say almost the first event. There are things that people were anticipating before then, but that was kind of the first event premiere, I feel like.
And what I'm kind of surprised about as we remember the Phantom Menace today is that we tend to just think about the movie and what we think of the movie today. We don't think about the context in which it came out and the hype leading up to it, because the hype was such a massive part of the experience for everyone. I think it needs a little bit more credit as due.
Yeah. You've seen the Triumph the Insult Comic Dog.
Yes.
With the people in line for Star Wars Phantom Menace.
Yes, I remember
one of the
that.
Best thing.
Yeah.
He walks up to the Darth Vader, the guy just in the full Darth Vader, and that the little thing on Darth Vader's chest with he's like, which one of these buttons do I press to have your parents come pick you up?
Yes.
It's like a 35-year-old man in a Darth Vader outfit. So yeah, I did note after you first talked about wanting to do the subject, I was like, okay, I'm going to think of these things. And almost everything was either Star Wars or Madonna related. So I will keep my Madonna ones to a minimum. But for music, I wasn't really into it. And that was the one window I had because I liked pop music. And at that point, she was just making the best pop music. And it was an interesting thing with religion and like all of that expression and like all of that. I like people who muck up the waters, but I don't like to be that person. So I enjoyed that aspect and stuff like that. That was the first time I was in college too. So I drove an hour to go get like the single that came out before this album. But the one thing I do remember is when we went to see her in concert in San Francisco. And like, I never really go to concerts. I'd been to one or two, and it was in, I forget what arena it was in, but it was in San Francisco. And my wife and I at the time drove down there and you know, had a friend down there to stay with. And that feeling, because I'd never been to a concert like that, especially in an inside arena, which is neat. And of course, it was sold out, like 65,000 people or however many fit in an arena. And when the lights go out to like announce, like, this is it, this is going to come, I had just never heard a roar or a noise like that before, of the anticipation of like, it's going to start. And that's the moment that's always the greatest, because it's not bad yet. You know, you exactly. can't pick it apart. It's just that, oh, this is what I've been waiting for.
It's happening right now. Yeah. And yeah, no strikes.
This is the moment I was waiting for, it to be right at the beginning.
Yeah.
I just remember just being so affected by that huge crowd noise of when the lights went out and the show was going to start. And it was just a really cool experience.
Now, how many times have you seen Madonna?
Twice. So that was actually the week before 9/11 that we saw her.
Oh, wow.
So, and then when she came to Portland two or three years ago, I saw her again. And I mean, for a person who doesn't see concerts, like, to me, that's the biggest and most expensive and has the most cutting edge technology, like outside of a U2 concert. And so to see it just from a theater standpoint, which is always intriguing to me too, like the backstage and the production is just amazing on a concert like that. So I've only seen her twice. I've seen Weird Al three times before summer. Nice. So yeah, Weird Al and Madonna, and I saw Alanis Morissette at a small venue in Yakima.
Oh, cool.
And then at the Gorge, I saw live PJ Harvey and Veruca Salt were a combined bill that I went to for some reason.
That's a great venue.
Yeah, it's great. That's the only time I've ever been there, but it's so beautiful out there.
It is.
But, so that takes care of my. Do you have any music ones?
Let's see. I don't know if I pulled out any music ones.
Oh, that kind of surprised me.
I know. I could have, but I figured.
You have all these other ones.
Yeah, I figured. I don't know. Music, I feel, is a very personal thing. And there is so much music out there that the chances that what the music that you were really into is probably much less chance of someone else really being into that.
Yeah.
So people could connect.
Oh, I do one more Madonna related.
Okay.
Note. The one time that in my life I have myself gone to the 12 a.m. It was in Kennewick of all places, and there was like a Hastings book and video type store. And for some reason, they had like a midnight listening party. So they would just be playing. They had like pizza and drinks at this hick town in the middle of Washington. And I was like only a block away from our house. And so I just stayed up. It's like, Serena, do you want to come? She's like, no. It's like, all right. So I went and listened to the album a little bit and just kind of looked around at the displays or whatever and bought it then. But that was the one time I went to the midnight release or whatever, because I got to see who shows up for this in this town.
No, it definitely adds to the experience if you can do it around other people that are also
super excited
into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one example that it may not be one of the best, most profound examples of anticipation and hype, but I think it's really interesting in terms of it doesn't matter. In the end, it didn't matter at all how good or bad the end product was. I had a perfectly pleasant experience and do not regret the anticipation whatsoever. And they did such a great job with the marketing, and I was on board like the minute I heard about this movie. And from that moment, every new bit of information about the movie, I was there the whole way. And I was like, opening day, I was like, this is, and then the movie ended up being very, very mediocre, but I wasn't disappointed simply because I was able to look back at the experience as a whole and be like, well, that was fun. And the movie I'm talking about is Snakes on a Plane.
Oh, yes.
I remember the very first time I just heard that title, I was like,
totally forgot about that.
I have to know more about this. And then it was, you know, Samuel L. Jackson was involved, and Snakes on a Plane was only the working title for the film, and they were going to retitle it. And Samuel L. Jackson said that, like,
he's like, no,
I won't be involved if you change
like,
it.
I signed on for this.
Yes. I signed on for Snakes on a plane. And then, so I think that's what got people excited about. And this is before like the Sharknado era, when marketers caught on that, oh, if we can make a bad movie and still make money on it. And, you know, I truly don't think they set out to make necessarily a bad movie here. But Samuel L. Jackson obviously saw the humor in it, as did, I think, the internet at that time, which was ripe for a project like that.
What year was that? Like 2006, 2007?
No, I think it was 2004 or 2005. Okay. But I was just on board. I was like, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. And then they were really, I think they went back and filmed additional scenes once.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Because they were like, oh, this movie's going to be even bigger than we thought. We better like, because I think by that point, people's expectations were through the roof. And they're like, we got to up our game a little bit.
The title is the best thing about our movie. We should do something about that.
And I was that kid in college who like forced all of my friends to go on opening night. I was like, this is going to be the best thing ever. And then it really wasn't.
It wasn't, but the theater experience of that was amazing. Because everybody wanted that same, And then, I forgot about that.
And then that one line, everyone in the audience yelled it out together. Yeah. These motherfucking snakes on a motherfucking plane.
Good old Samuel Jackson.
But I guess that's a great example of how the build-up can completely change your experience with the thing. Because if someone were to just stumble upon that movie today and watch it, they'd be like,
it's
whatever.
Yeah.
But I had such a fantastic experience with snakes on a plane.
Yeah. Oh, I totally forgot about that. That's a good one. But I did have Sharknado down because I remember that somehow that, I mean, people had kind of been talking about it. And then like the day before and the day of, like the hype was just getting out of control. And then I think they aired it on the East Coast, obviously, first. So at that point, everybody was freaking out. And I remember getting off work around 7 and I called Mark and I said, I am coming over. We're ordering pizza and we were watching this movie called Sharknado. And he's like, what? I said, we're watching Sharknado. you have no say in this. And so we watched it, and it was just, of course, totally fun and totally great. But I just remember that day where it kind of broke. It was that same snakes on a plane thing where they didn't really intend it. And they'd done, like...
See, I was on the anti-Sharknado train from day one.
I think the day after it, all the flavor had been chewed out for me.
I think that was the first project where they it was a little bit more less organic, that whole project.
A little more it was a little forced. a tornado made of sharks. A little deus ex machina for you. Oh, that's so funny. Movies, though, too. The other one I remember is when The Dark Knight came out, because the hype for that movie was so great. Heath Ledger had passed away. We had been seeing clips of and hearing stories about how he put the character together and all that. And I remember Rick Emerson's radio station had some tickets, and they had a midnight showing, like the Thursday midnight. And I remember going to the theater in Tigard, just lines everywhere. And I ended up finding our friend Joni, who had she was in the front of the line, and like I got to sit with Rick and with Sarah and like all the people on the show, and I was all excited and thought I was so cool. And then the movie ended up being super great, and that was a fun experience too, because everyone was just so pumped for it, and it was a really good movie too. You weren't let down with the hype was fun,
yeah,
but like the movie was really great too, except for the part where they go to Japan, which could be totally edited out of the movie
and make no difference.
But yeah, that was really fun.
I remember there is one movie. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. I totally went to a movie simply to watch the trailer that was advertised that was going to be attached to that movie.
Did you go see Meet Joe Black so you can watch the Phantom Menace trailer?
No.
Oh.
I did not do that.
They played it at the end too, so you had to sit through Meet Joe Black if you wanted to see it again.
Oh wow, I'm glad I didn't do that. I hated that movie.
I never saw it.
So boring.
It's like 9 hours long.
But not that my experience that I'm about to mention was much better. I went to see the movie 13 Days.
With Kevin Bacon?
Kevin Costner.
Okay.
About the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Okay. All right.
It was like 2.5 hours, and it was also extremely boring. But I sat through that just to see the trailer for The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Where they took the Requiem for a Dream music?
No.
Oh.
That was the Two Towers.
Okay.
Yeah. No, this was, and this is an interesting example. Like, the hype wasn't quite there yet for Lord of the Rings. But I was like such a Tolkien nerd by that point, and I just wanted to. I don't think that in that one, I don't think they released it online. So, they hadn't yet.
That
your first chance to see it was in the movie theater.
That was a big deal for a while, where they're like, the trailer playing before this.
Yeah.
And tried to market that for a while.
Yes, yes.
That's interesting.
And it obviously worked.
Yeah. Before, well, yeah, because you can used to go to Apple, like Apple QuickTime and see trailers that way. But it wasn't easy, especially when the speeds were so bad to see it in the theater. So exciting.
Yep. But I mean, I would have completely forgotten that movie 13 Days had it not been for the trailer attached to it.
What am I thinking? I'm thinking of 13. Oh, there's 13 Warriors with Antonio Banderas.
I liked that movie.
What else do I have here? Oh, one of the early things that both of them in 1989, very exciting year for.
You were excited that the Berlin Wall was coming down. You had front row
to
seats.
To see David Hasselhoff sing on the top of the Berlin Wall. My brother had actually visited the year before the Berlin Wall before it got taken down. But no, in 1989, there was Tim Burton's Batman.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was just getting into, you know, more pop culture that way. That was when I started collecting comics, too, because of the hype coming up to Batman. Mm. There was a little tiny comic store, like, right on the other side of the fence from our high school, just run by, like, literally Patty and Selma.
Oh,
like,
my
these
gosh.
Two old ladies with beehives chain smoking. This is, like, in the early 90s, so you can still, like, smoke inside the comic book store, and going in there, it was all dirty and weird. And so I was collecting Batman, and I remember little religious Todd walking on the way to school, like the month before Batman finally comes out, being like, all right, Jesus, like I'm a big fan of what you do. I'm all on board, yeah. But just like wait to have the world end until after Batman comes out. Because I really want to see Batman. And I remember being so excited about that. And the Simpsons Christmas special debuted in 1989. And that's obviously Fox was new. And Simpsons was on Sunday night. And that Sunday night, after church, my mom and dad must have had like their little community group or church group, because we went over to someone's house, and all the kids were there too, and I got everybody, all the kids, to watch the Simpsons Christmas special while the adults were having their Bible study or whatever.
Was that the pilot of the Simpsons, the premiere?
Not technically the pilot, but it was the first thing we saw outside of the Tracy Ullman show.
Right, right.
So that was the very first one, and I just remember being so excited for that and and watching it at that church group for some reason, watching the Simpsons Christmas special.
I've got a television one too, and this is one that I was pretty sure that what was coming out was going to be bad, but I still wanted to be able to have enjoy the anticipation, so I was going to make it a big deal, knowing full well that it was probably going to be bad anyway, and that was for the most recent return of the X-Files to TV.
Oh.
And Brian Turner, who you mentioned previously already, he and his wife are both huge X-Files fans, as are myself and my wife, Sarah. And so we decided that, you know, for the length of that miniseries return, we were going to celebrate every night it came out. And we made X-Files themed cakes and cupcakes, and we got together, and most of them were terrible. But just to be able to get excited for a new X-Files again, you know, it was very nostalgic.
Totally.
And so it was fun to do.
I do remember the one TV one that I had outside The Simpsons was when Lost was on. And we watched it as it was just on TV. And so like every Wednesday you wait, and there was the whole buildup of the first season. And then they find the hatch. And what is the hatch? Oh, just the bright lights come out and the season's over. And we're like, what? And then you got to wait. And then the second season happens. And then there was the writer's strike. So there was like a year and a half in between Lost. And then there was the flash forward, and like everyone was going crazy. And it was such a bummer to have to wait, but it was so fun to have to wait and like just wonder what it was going to be. And
that is definitely a show I would agree where the if you look at the show as simply leading up to the end, then you'd probably be disappointed. But that show is more about the journey and less about the destination.
Yeah, the confusion.
Do you remember what you did for the finale?
I don't remember. Because I remember.
I really enjoyed Lost, but the finale was, I just thought was so bad.
Yeah, and I don't even remember watching it for the first time, but I do remember some of the other moments of watching Lost. But yeah, it is less about the destination than it is the journey. But it was, I mean, especially after that first year, which was so good.
It was.
That was so fun to watch.
Yep.
You have anything else?
We could probably sit here for another couple hours and reminisce. Just keep going through things. But in terms of things I definitely wanted to mention, one more type of anticipation that I think I would mention is this one's a lot harder to do. There's not really a hype train to jump on, but it's just something that you see and it speaks to you directly and you take a chance. You're like, that looks awesome. And I'm going to allow myself to get excited because that just, I think it's going to be great. And then if it ends up to actually be great, then you suddenly become a champ and you're like, I knew it. I thought that was, you know, it's something that becomes a cult classic later. And I've got one really good example of like, not everyone was excited right away, but I was like, I'm there day one. That's going to be amazing. And for me, that was Anchorman.
Oh, nice.
I'm not even particularly a big Will Ferrell fan, but yeah. I just remember the first Anchorman trailer. I was like, that's going to be brilliant.
Still, I think probably the funniest thing I've ever seen and will get me to laugh every time is Will Ferrell in the phone booth hearing about just having that mental breakdown because he does it just like a three-year-old and not like you could tell what a person acts like a three-year-old or a person is like he embodies that three-year-old of just like you can't your arms don't work and are flailing and you're just freaking out glass box of emotion is one of the best lines in the world and just watching him have that breakdown is just amazing. Ugh.
Yep. But sadly, it was not to be repeated with Anchorman 2.
No, I think I saw it, but I don't remember it, so that's not a good sign.
It was not very good.
He's kind of been having a tough time
I did
lately.
Just...
Did you watch Watson and Holmes?
No.
No, I heard it was
that
a disaster.
Guy, yeah. I did just today, though, hear that he's launching a Ron Burgundy podcast.
I saw that pop up somewhere, and I wondered what in the world that could be, or if it would have... Like Stephen Colbert said that his problem too is like how do you have a character sustain itself? Like Ron Burgundy is funny because we see him, you know, for 10 seconds saying "Go f yourself, San Diego," but like we don't want to watch all of the rest of the newscast, like because that's not the joke. So I wonder if in character
it's
it could continue to be funny.
Yeah,
huh? But Will Ferrell's funny, so
that'll be interesting.
Anyway. Anyway, well, that was fun. That was a great idea for a suggestion. So if anyone out there listening has a suggestion for a show, why don't you let us know and then come on the show and talk about it. You can hear the show on Fun Employment Radio along with Portland at the Movies, which we do once a month with Brian and Mark, too. The rest of the month, what is the Unipiper doing? The Unipiper is very busy the rest of this month.
I think the big thing is where you're going to be as well in about 2 weeks from now. We're going to be at Wizard World Comic Con. Going to have a Unipiper table, and we're in discussions to maybe even bring Portland to the movies to record a live episode.
Yes, and you will need to learn the theme to Buffy the Vampire Slayer on your on your bagpipes because all of them will be there
except
Sarah Michelle Gellar and David Boreanaz. But that's and they've been kind of touting that now too. They're like Buffy the Vampire Slayer reunion because there's like 12 of them. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
And Jason Momoa. Who will also be there.
I guess in the nostalgia cycle, it's Buffy's year.
Yeah, and I looked up, we were looking up Wizard World in different locations because they're a traveling convention and which people were here and which ones, and some of them will follow around, which is interesting. Follow the convention. So yeah, that'll be super fun. Come say hi to us. Other than that, I don't think we have much to do, so I want to do...
Let's get out of here before Mark gets home.
Before he gets home. All right, I'm going to see if this is the proper clip of the anticipation song from Rocky Horror, which I don't know very well.
Come up to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation.
Well done.
All right, we'll see you guys later. Thank you for listening.